Hello, I'm so excited to be sharing this with you today because we are going to be diving into the world of psychopaths. And the reason why I wanted to dive into this week is because we've been talking a lot about narcissistic relationships, we've been talking a lot about toxic relationships, and we haven't really tapped into the darker aspects of narcissism. And a big part of that is talking about psychopaths. So, when I started thinking about psychopaths, one of the best interviews that we did was with someone called Scott Rouse. Now, if you've ever heard of Scott Rouse, or sorry, if you haven't heard of Scott Rouse even, number one, you need to. So he's written an awesome book around body language, and he's also part of the behavioral panel. And so if you haven't checked the behavioral panel out, check them out. They're on YouTube, and they go through different interviews and scenarios where they read people's body language better than a polygraph machine. Do check them out, they're freaking amazing. I think one of the most interesting interviews I saw them do was the Meghan Markle one. So when Oprah Winfrey interviewed Meghan Markle and Harry. So do go and check that out. They're called the Behavioral Panel, and they've even been on the Dr. Phil show. So do go and check that out. But we interviewed Scott. So we interviewed Scott Rouse, and we talked about everything to do with psychopaths. So how to spot them, what tends to happen, how their minds work, all these amazing things. And to be honest, I thought it would be really cool to go ahead and share that interview with you today. So do enjoy this interview. My partner and I, so Jonam and I, we actually interviewed him together, so you get to hear Jonam's voice as well. But we did this about a couple of years ago, and it's so freaking juicy. So get comfy and enjoy.
Okay. Well, let's do this first. Let's go over what a psychopath is.
That'd be awesome.
There are lots of labels people give quote unquote psychopaths. One of the big ones, or one of the labels you'll hear, then people really don't know the differences in psychopaths and sociopaths and the malignant narcissists and all those types of things. Let's talk about what a psychopath isn't. There's a term you hear all the time called sociopath. And people say, "Oh, I know he's a sociopath." Sociopath is just something that really got its footing being used in court, because if you said psychopath, most people are under the impression that if you're a psychopath, if you see a knife, you're just going to grab it and start stabbing everybody. That's not so. It happens sometimes when they go through those, they'll have an episode and they'll start doing that. But 99% of the time, that's not what it is. And most of the psychopaths that are out walking around out in the wild, you'll never know they are. Most of them don't know they are. That's the scary part of it. We'll talk about how they find out they're psychopaths in a few minutes. But when you start looking at them, we also, the narcissist comes up and the different terms and degrees of narcissism. Well, when it comes to narcissism, every psychopath is a narcissist, but not every narcissist is a psychopath. And people think there's a place between narcissist and malignant narcissist and then sociopath and then psychopath. The sociopath really is just another word, I guess. In real life, it would be a word for a hardcore criminal. They go to prison early. They get killed early. They kill people early, and they go to prison. They're just violent people. You know, there's no they're, and they're more on the nature versus nurture side of psychopathy. If you're going to talk about them as, or they're more in the nurture instead of nature. Sorry, let me take that back. Because what happens is when you have a psychopath, you're dealing with someone. There's this thing called the amygdala. There are two of them, and they're in your brain, and they're about an inch and a half in. And they're the ones that run your feelings. In other words, am I sad? Am I happy? What's happening here? I need to get ready for something. Empathy, especially empathy. That's where all the and that's because we're talking about the limbic system. And in the limbic system, that's kind of sort of the engineer of the train of the limbic system. And when something is wrong with that, that's when you start having problems with someone being able to empathize with someone else. You see people who can kick a dog or be mean to animals or be mean to children all the time. I mean, you see that often. It doesn't mean they're a psychopath, but when they kill them, they burn them, and they torture them, those types of things, not even humans, that's when you're dealing with a psychopath. And a lot of times a psychopath will be, they'll put themselves in positions of power. They'll be everything from the bellboy to a police officer to a priest to a mayor, a politician, you name it. Anything in a position of power, that's where they want to be. Because when you're dealing with a psychopath, you're dealing with an ego. That's really all there is. They have no feel. They have no ability to feel for you because their amygdala don't work. It doesn't work. It's either damaged or it's missing or it's not functioning right. So you can be born that way. A lot of them are. Or you can have an accident and that happened to you. You can take some kind of drug that fries parts of your brain and that would happen. I don't know what the drugs would be, but that's what you always hear or what I always hear. So you're dealing with someone who has no ability at all, none whatsoever, to feel sorry for you or to have any feelings you have. The way people get involved with them, it happens like this. Let's say you, Lily, you go to wherever it is you go all the time before the pandemic hit, and you meet somebody. Yeah. And you think you meet this person, you're like, oh my gosh, this person is the most wonderful person I've ever met. They get me. They really understand me. And they say, you know what? I get you. I understand what kind of person you are. I see what you're doing. You're brilliant. And what you're doing is brilliant. I understand it. I get it. I mean, a lot of people don't understand it, but I get it. Hand to God, I see what you're doing. And you feel like you've met this kindred spirit who just gets you and understands you. And you think you understand them. And about a year and a half later, you find out after you marry him, after 2 years or whatever, then you find out what happens when they call it the mask slips. And you see the psychopath in there. And it's not the person you thought it was. And all this person is doing is imitating things he's seen and learned from other people by watching. Psychopaths, when they're young, they don't know they're psychopaths. They have no idea. Some of them to this day are older and don't know they're psychopaths. That what happens is, I keep saying is this, but here's what usually happens in the chain of events when they find out. Let's say, for example, there's a psychopath and he would live or she would live, let's say in downtown London, you know, and there's a place down there. I can't remember what it is near Soho where they have lofts and stuff. So people would live up, they live there. There was a lot of action, a lot of people going by, a lot of things going on because the psychopath really doesn't have any feelings, but what they do feel is adrenaline. They get a shot of adrenaline. They'll get that when there's a bunch of people around, a lot of action happening. So let's say this, Lily, if you were a psychopath and didn't know it, here's what might happen to you. Here's how you may find out. How old are you now?
I'm 28.
Okay. You would have found out about 5 years ago. And so what would happen that 5 years ago, you'd be in your loft, you know, down near Soho, and you'd think, well, I think tonight I'm going to have Chinese food. And you'd go downstairs and you go down the street where everybody was. And as you're going down the street, you'd see an ambulance down there. And the closer you got, you'd see police cars and you'd see a bunch of people standing around. You see a lot of things going on, people making a lot of this with their eyebrows. You may even see the grief muscle, which I think I can still do, where this thing turns into a U right here. You'll see that.
Yeah.
And you may see that a couple of times and you'll know something important is going on, but you really don't have you're really not sure what it is. And the further you go, you walk up on this thing where it's a little child's been run over by a car and the child is obviously dead. And the mother is over the child crying just, you know, and they're trying to console her and try to pull her away from the body. And you see that. It's heavy stuff, not to you, but you see that and you go, I'm going to do Mugu Gai Pan. That's sweet and sour shrimp. That's what it's going to be. And you go get sweet and sour shrimp and you walk past that scene one more time on your way home and you don't really think about it because you saw it earlier. About an hour later, when you're up in your loft, you'll be eating, you'll have finished eating and you'll go in the bathroom and you'll find yourself making the same expressions or trying to make the same expressions you saw that woman making about her child, because you don't know what that is. You don't really understand that. You've seen people do that, but you're like, I need to figure that out. So you'll be in there trying to make all these expressions this woman made. And then you go, something's not right here. I wonder what's different about me. And then you figure out over the next few years that people have feelings. You've always heard about feelings. You've always heard about songs. Those things never affected you. But as you go through this and things continue, you start making these comparisons. And then you start saying, well, I've got to learn how to do that. Since everybody else does it, I know I don't have that, but I'm going to learn how to do it. Mm-hmm. And so you learn by listening to other people. And you'll hear psychopaths repeat what you say, if you say, or what other people say in an emotional situation. For example, there was a guy that was in Nashville that I knew. And I didn't know he was a psychopath. I didn't know him that long. And as I'm talking to him at one point, we were talking about taxes. And I said, these damn taxes, you know, it's you make all this and they take it away from you. And I had specific things that I said during this, right? And so there's a restaurant down near Second Avenue, which has got blown up. And it's on Fourth Avenue, a couple of streets up in Nashville. And it's called The Palm. And so we were at The Palm. And we were in the little bar area there because you can eat in the bar area or you can go over in the other area, in the restaurant area. But we were sitting there in the bar area. And I heard this guy talking. I was getting ready to turn around. And when I did, I heard him say, damn it, taxes. I swear to God. And he said the same thing I said. And so I had bells and whistles going off. I'm like, oh, no, this isn't good at all. So come to find out from his wife, who I knew, he had done some horrible, horrible things later on. They're still looking for him now. He's in Canada. But he had done some horrible things to his children, done some horrible things to her, and almost killed all of them a couple of times. So it was a really bad situation. But my point being, you'll hear the psychopath that you know repeat things you've said if you're in an emotional state, but somewhere else where they're not sure you're listening or they don't think you're listening, because they're trying to let other people know they have emotions. So that question never comes up. You know, why would you question anybody having emotions anyway? You wouldn't. But they want to. They'll exude these fake emotions. Wow. Can you hear that noise back there?
No.
Okay, good.
Something I'm really curious about your thoughts on, Scott, is what you've just said is fascinating. So if I'm understanding right, they'll mimic, right? That they're trying to showcase and display humanity. I've not in a professional context, but I've grown up around a lot of people on the autism and Asperger's kind of spectrum. And that happens a lot there, I've noticed, where there's a mimicking where it's like, well, I'm not sure how to be socially, I'm not sure how to act like a normal person. So I'll quote this thing or I'll say the things that seem to work for other people. And so it's the same behavior in some ways, but coming from a different place, I think. How would you demarcate the difference between those two? Or am I
okay? In the autistic person, I'm very familiar with that. Very familiar with it. The autistic person, most people are in the impression they don't even have feelings, because no matter what's going on, they have a lot of times will have a blank stare on their face or an expression that won't fit with the situation. And when they smile, it'll be like this. They'll go away real quick because they're trying to do that as well and try to fit in. A lot of them are really lonely, you know, because they don't know how to fit in. So they're trying to imitate that to get along with you because they want to connect with people. Mm. The psychopath does that because he wants you to think, or she wants you to think, that there's nothing wrong with them. They have emotions too. They're just like you, and they're coming from a different direction from it. So it's the intent of the psychopath is markedly different from the intent of using those with the autistic person. The autistic person wants is just trying to get along the best they can and connect and understand what's happening. Whereas a psychopath knows what's going on and they're trying to get themselves in that situation so they can take advantage of something. That's all they're all about is themselves. So they're trying to get in that situation for themselves so they can take advantage of you, get something from you, help you use you to help them get somewhere or get something from someone else or another situation. So those are the differences in that.
Yes, there's always that, you know, that awareness of social conformity, but then also that need and intent to fit in, to be able to you know, do the manipulative things underneath the radar. Mm. Wow. Mm. Okay. Even without that lack of empathy, they know that that's important. Yeah.
So they lack empathy, but there sounds like there's social intelligence there. There's intelligence and awareness of how to
nicely put. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, very well put. Because they see what's going on and they're mimicking that. Most people are in the impression they're really smart, that all psychopaths are these brilliant. There's some idiots out there, believe me. A bunch of idiots out there. But there are some really smart ones. So they're usually in like they'll be CEOs, they'll be doing those types of things. So they're usually in that position of power. So there are some really smart ones, but not all are really smart.
Yeah, it's almost like, is it very similar to sort of narcissists? Like, I find with narcissists, like the true narcissists, they almost view people as resources. Is that a similar outlook then as like the psychopaths? Yeah.
Like a bug. I mean, a lot of times you see other people as bugs. I mean, the same way you see a bug, you go, get that out of here or kill it or whatever. That's how they see people. They have no empathy toward them at all.
Gosh. Okay. And then that's kind of just to do with the underdeveloped part of the empathy in the brain.
The amygdala that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Is it possible for someone who was maybe born and grew up with a psychopathic parent or with, mm-hmm. with that around them, where they maybe have that part of the brain just fine, but they were corrupted by being surrounded by it? And how does that affect someone who would otherwise maybe be normal?
Okay, you remember ISIS? Let's talk about them. That's a perfect example. You'll see the members of ISIS will have, their children will grow up seeing them beat their mothers up and kill people, stomp little babies to death in the street, have no regard for little animals, will set them on fire, you know, pull their heads off, pull their hands, their arms off, those types of things. And so you see a child who's seeing that, and that child grows up watching all that.
Yeah.
And when, as they grow up watching that, those feelings that usually develop in a child for empathy and sympathy for something else or someone else, those don't develop. They don't get a chance because the only thing they see happen is someone getting beat up or someone getting killed by someone in their family. They think that's the way it's supposed to be. So that would fall under the quote unquote sociopath. When I was talking about earlier, they're just violent because those feelings, that the equipment they have to develop feelings and sympathy for others is never develops because it always gets squashed down. It's never, you know, usually the mother would go, "Oh, you sweet little thing, don't you be mean to somebody because you don't know what they're feeling. You know, it might hurt his feelings. It might hurt him." For example, my mom growing up, our thing was, the rule was, if you do anything, you make sure, number one, nobody's feelings get hurt. Number two, nobody gets hurt. And number three, you clean it up. But the first rule was make sure you don't hurt anybody's feelings.
Yeah.
So they don't have any of that whatsoever growing up and seeing that. So that usually is what you would term, if they're, a lot of times they can be labeled as psychopaths because they're behavior is really similar to a psychopath's, but that's the one that's been raised and from a nurture situation instead of the nature situation where you're born with a problem in your amygdala, you're raised where those feelings aren't nurtured and allowed to grow or to do anything with them.
Yeah, it's like those belief systems have already been conditioned.
Yeah.
Acceptable, yeah. This is what you should believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's their level of social conformity.
Yeah. So in the civilized kind of world that we all live in, where, you know, things are a lot more covert, like a really psychopathic or just an abusive person, generally, they know to play their cards close to their chest.
Oh, yeah.
Until you've lured someone in, and once you've got them, then you can do what you like. So,
and then you tell everybody else that person's crazy. The psychopath will tell people that person has problems. They'll tell you, "You're crazy. I would never do that. I don't even know her."
Yeah.
You kidding me? I don't do that. I'm not the guy. They know all the things to say and all the things to do, but they'll separate you from all your friends and they'll separate you from your family. So you have no one to go, "Am I crazy? Or does this look weird to you? Or is it just me?" You won't be able to do that most of the time. Then by that time, you've already told everybody how wonderful this person is. You said, "Oh gosh, he or she is the greatest person in the whole world. I can't believe it." So you've got that thing against you where you're embarrassed to say, "I was wrong. This person's crazy. Something's not right here."
Yeah.
You know, and what the narcissist and the psychopath will do is this. You have certain chemicals in your brain. When I'm really nice to somebody, or you're really nice to somebody, or somebody's really nice to you, those things, oxytocin will fire off in your brain, and you'll start bonding with that person. And it's one of those things, and certain endorphins will fire off, and different chemical reactions happen in your brain, to keep it simple. And your body gets addicted to those. Your brain gets addicted to those feelings. So you'll keep going back to that narcissist or that psychopath because they keep giving you those. And then one day they just cut them off. And once they cut you off, you still chase them to try to get that feeling. And every now and then they'll throw a little bit out and have you come over and get some of it. And you'll go back to normal and they'll still keep leading you along. So that's one of the things to watch out as well, where they, in some cases, when you brainwash somebody, it's called love bombing. It's one of the first things you do, like when you get you into a cult. It's the same thing with psychopaths and narcissists. They'll just lavish, you know, all this lavish praise on you and tell you how wonderful you are and tell everybody around you how wonderful you are. And then it's all of a sudden it quits. And then you start fighting for that. "Wait, what? I thought whatever." And then they'll give you a little bit and you'll follow them. So that's one thing that happens as well a lot of times in relationships. with one.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the love bombing, and then you've got the lack of empathy there. I mean, yeah, but I guess it's like, I think the, what's the best way to see if someone's faking empathy? I think that would be a really good.
Well, there are different things you can do. There's a psychopath test by Robert Hare. He's sort of the godfather of psychopathy. He came up with this test, and you ask these questions, and then depending on the score this person gets, you can pretty much say, okay, this person is probably a psychopath. But you can't, the questions that you ask aren't like, for example, you want to find out if they're glib. You know, if they're flipping, but you can't say, are you glib? Are you flipping? You can't ask the questions like that. You have to form the questions that go along your conversation. So you slip them in as you go along. So it takes a while to actually give this test if you're talking to someone. But look it up. Look up. There's a book called Without Conscience. It's by Robert Hare. And it'll tell you a whole lot. You'll learn a whole lot from that book. There's another one he did with another guy called Snakes in Suits. It's the psychopath. Okay, you've got that.
I need to read that,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Because that's a good one too, because it talks about the psychopath out in the business world, in other words, and when they're CEOs and those types of things, how you get in. So yeah, Robert Hare he's the guy. He's the Elvis and Michael Jackson of psychopathy. So
nice. I hope that answers your question. It's fascinating that they go into kind of like the power roles that you were saying there. I think I remember you saying that they can be really good surgeons because they've got that disconnect already.
Oh, yeah.
And there's that book, Wisdom of Psychopaths, which was interesting to read. Here are the roles in society where they come in handy, like firefighting and surgery and things like that.
Yeah, they don't understand that's what they are, but for some reason they're on the side of good, I guess you'd say. Mm. I work a lot with the military, and those earmarks you'll see in there just from conversations, but because some people are very violent, and they need a place to be violent, and the military is great for it if they're for you, and they can go be violent somewhere else, you know, on the other team. So that's pretty much what you're looking for, and so that's predominant in some sections of the military, I've found.
Kind of like
police departments as well. Do I?
It's basically using it rather than getting people to mold it.
Yeah, you know? Because they're on the side of good. You know, they may not have feelings, they might be able to empathize, but they know they want their team to be that team, whether their team is their country or whatever it is. They want to win. And they want their team to win, and they want to go be violent over there. They don't want to be violent over here. They'll be violent to protect these people. Yeah. So there's this odd setup where you'll protect all your stuff and your people, but you'll go be violent on those people.
Yeah.
But you'll have the same traits as a psychopath. And thank God we have those people, because it gets ugly out there sometimes, I'm sure as you're aware. When the violence of war, I've never been to war, I've never been in the military, but that it gets pretty nasty out there.
Yeah,
you need people to be able to deal with that.
I'd be I'm emotional as it is, nice. Like I'll cry at adverts, let alone anything else.
So something I'm curious about, Scott, is so in a civilian context, say, you know, dating, relationships, just trying to build up a life when we can socialize again. How can people, like, we don't want people to feel like they have to become skeptical or mistrusting of everyone. And so how can you remain safe? How can you identify predatory type characters while also not just building up a wall and cutting yourself off from?
Okay. Well, let me give you a little warning about learning about psychopaths. When I was 19, I guess, is when I really started getting into psychopathy. And once you do that, until I was about 23, I thought everybody was a psychopath. I was like, that kid behind me in the eighth grade is a psychopath. I remember things he said and the way he acted. So you really got to be careful about that. Just because you learn about this doesn't mean everybody is one, but you've got to be careful. One of the main things to look out for, and people see this as they'll take this for a sign of attraction when they'll see someone, let's say if you're in a bar, if that ever happens again, and you're in a bar and you look over and you see somebody looking at you. And you look away and you look back and they're still looking at you. and the person could probably be really good looking. And you're like, wow, that's great. That person, and they keep looking, they keep staring at you. And that's called the psychopathic gaze. And what happens in that situation is they've locked onto you as a predator and they keep looking at you, but they don't know that they're supposed to look away. They don't feel, you know, if I'm not there with you guys, but even looking at your pictures, I have to look away from it because it's weird. It feels weird. I can't just sit there and look you in the eye like that the whole time because it becomes uncomfortable. It's going to be weird if I kept doing that. And they don't have that feeling. They don't get that feeling of, I need to look away. That way they'll stare you right in the eye. And that's why they can talk to you. And if you feel like you're the only person in the room, once they start that stuff, because they don't look away, they're focused on you and they're going to tell you whatever you know, what do they think you want to hear to get there to keep your attention as you're talking to them. And those are just some things you'll see right there that I'm doing when they try to, you know, you'll see they'll do things around their face that'll bring you in and those types of things. But almost like they won't hypnotize you, but they'll, these things that your brain will get used to seeing as you're talking to this person, they'll keep doing those. And these odd movements you'll see, sometimes you'll see this, sometimes you won't, but you'll see these odd movements they'll make. And it's almost like the snake charmer thing where you're like, but those are rare and far between. But when you run into one, man, I've run into a couple of those and it's fascinating when you get to talk to one of those because they try to work it on you and you can see it coming. So you're just sitting there watching them. But anyway, so that's the first thing to look out for is that psychopathic stare, because you'll see that. And that's the, you'll think, I need to talk to that person, because you'll look away and then you'll look back and they'll still be looking at you and they won't look away. You know,
it's an unwritten rule, isn't it? It's like you can't really tell people about, you know, blink, you know, things like blink rates or staring at people. It's that, you know, you can't really teach that level of social conformity. It's like really going into the detail of it. That's really interesting.
I hope that answered it. Did I answer enough?
Yeah.
Brilliant. So that's for quite an advanced seducer style psychopath, I guess. That would be. So let's say a workplace romance, or there's, you know, your boss or your that person in the office who's charismatic and they've got all this stuff, and they're working on you and doing all the things that a perfectly good mate would do, or a good suitor, a good candidate. So how can you sort the wheat from the chaff? Are there any other than that in an initial contact scenario? There's that one. In a more long play situation, how can you sort between the two?
After a while, you'll see something's not right about that person. You won't know what it is, but women can do this, man. 9 out of 10 times, they'll say, I don't know what's right about that guy. I just don't like him. I don't know why. Or there's something not right about him. Yeah, he's good looking. Yeah, he's great. And I've been out with him a couple of times. He's so nice to me. But something's just not right there. You'll be able to almost sense this. It sounds crazy to me sitting here. You can sense whatever, but your brain picks up those things. Mm. There are two parts of your brain when you see things, especially when women see things. There's one called the fusiform gyrus. That's a little thing right in here, right in here in your brain. And then you've got the mid-temporal gyrus that's right here. And then you have the locus coeruleus, which is about as big as a BB, back at the base of your brain. And the fusiform gyrus will gather up and see all the little things that are going on in a person's face and situationally things that are happening. And it'll gather that information and it sends it back to the locus coeruleus. That's for the little stuff. For the bigger stuff, the mid-temporal gyrus grabs all that stuff, all the big movements. So somebody's moving around, talking, a tree falling, or a car driving by, or a bird flying by. And it gathers up all that information and sends it back to the locus coeruleus as well. Once it gets in there, your locus coeruleus starts comparing everything you've ever seen to everything you're seeing now, or you just saw in that situation. It's going, and if it's something's not right there, it goes, I don't know, I don't know what it is yet. I just don't know what's right. And that's, for guys, it's called your gut feeling. And we think we know everything because of our gut. Then you have the most powerful, probably the most powerful force in the world, which is woman's intuition, because that trumps the man's gut feeling every time. They can spot things and feel things. And that's why, because their brain is much more powerful at gathering that information much more quickly and throwing it back there and going through it than we are. And that's than men are. So they have an advantage to that, a real advantage in that. So women will get that gut feeling a lot of the time, not every time, but a lot of the time they'll get that if they'll pay attention to what's going on. So that's really helpful. And you may not know what bothers you until the next day. You might be in the shower and you're washing your hair and standing there because your brain just, you've done this a million times. Your brain's just going, okay, soap, okay, whatever. So that's when your locus coeruleus goes, boom, okay, everybody's open. Let's take on everything. Let's go, let's bat it around the room, see what we got. And you go, oh no, he said this. That's not right. I know I don't like him now because he knows, and these things will connect. That's why people have big ideas in the shower, in the tub, and things like that, or driving, because your brain just sitting there as your brain can think through those things.
So one of the most common things that we hear when you work with someone who's been in an abusive relationship or just something that was bad is they'll say, I should have known. I saw these red flags at the beginning. I had that feeling. I just should have known, but I ignored it. I talked myself into it. And so there's paying attention to what's going on, but then there's paying attention to our own instincts, to our own survival mechanism. Why do you think people ignore that as often as they do?
Because they're trained to. When you're a little kid, you don't have somebody going, don't think that, don't feel that. But as they get a little bit older, they go, oh, don't worry, he's fine. Yeah, but no, he's fine. It's your grandfather, or not your uncle, or whatever it is, or your dad's best friend, he's fine. You know, oh, okay. And so those feelings are sort of shut down the older you get. If you're left as a little kid and you were allowed to feel all those things, man, you'd probably be a mind reader, you know, these days. But you're used to socially not saying anything about that, because everybody these days, everybody's perfect. Everybody has nothing wrong with anyone. You know, they have to show you something's wrong. No, they don't. You can spot a lot of things that are wrong right out of the gate if you pay attention. And it takes, like for me, I'm 58. So it's taken me 58 years to listen to that little Scott I've got down in my stomach that goes, hey, man, something's not right here. So I listen to that little guy, man. I do. And women should do that too, especially in those situations in bars. Listen to that little girl that's in there from when you were a kid up to now. You've been training her and saying, and you've been listening to her. And you've been training her by all the stuff you bring in and think. So listen, when you get that little gut feeling, you get the women's intuition, listen to it. Because it may say, I can't tell you how many times I've talked to somebody who said, I know I shouldn't have gone out in that parking lot. Didn't see anything. I didn't, it was late and I could have had somebody go with me. But when I looked out there, even though I didn't see anything, I just knew something was wrong with it. Their brain may have seen somebody duck, but slowly sit behind something, or just something that would lead up to what's going to happen. And they don't listen to it. And it can be some of the most, it will change your life if you don't listen to that sometimes. It'll for the worst. And so many times I've heard women say the exact phrase you said, and they said, I should have known. I shouldn't have done that. I knew I shouldn't have done that. And how many times have you heard somebody say, I knew I shouldn't have done that. I knew it. They did know it. Their brain said, look, don't do that. Don't do that. Doing that. And their gut's going, don't do that. Don't do that. Listen to that. Listen to that. It can save your life.
Yeah. I read probably about a couple of years ago now, the book, The Gift of Fear.
That's where I'm going next. That's where I'm going to go down. Yeah, it's a great book. It really is. I think you should give that to every woman in the world. Should get a copy of that. I'm not kidding. And they'll go, I get it now. It's okay to step off the elevator if somebody gets on and I think they're creepy. It's okay to not do it. You don't know that person. You need to hurt their feelings. Who cares? Yeah. Get off the elevator. If somebody gets on and it looks weird. If they look weird and they get on, you just get right off. Or if you think you should start screaming, damn, you start screaming. If not, that person will go, wasn't me or whatever. Do whatever it is. If you think you're about to get in trouble, don't say anything because you're afraid to say something.
Yeah.
It could save you. It could save you from a horrible, from that forward on life of thinking about that moment for the rest of your life.
Yeah. So true. Cause I think it is. It's that level of being polite, being told what to think of that at that young age. I think that's such a key element there. Sort of opened a lot of childhood memories of, don't do this, sit down nicely, be nice,
Like
you said, even conditioned from that age to ignore those feelings or tell ourselves that we're wrong in order to be polite or to basically fit in, isn't it? It's going back to that caveman era of you either fit in or you die, basically. Nice.
Compliant.
Yeah.
Compliant people are easier to manage.
Yeah, they really are, especially from a psychopath's point of view, because they know that personality type. And they know they'll do that.
Yeah.
So
I think this is the thing, isn't it? It's going back to that permission element. As soon as you're in that element where it's like, okay, you're giving something to do, or there's the love bombing, you've also automatically got someone addicted to wanting that love or wanting that affection or wanting that thing. And I think that's the thing that fascinates me the most. You've almost made someone completely addictive and then allowing people to heal or go through the withdrawal period of that relationship when it eventually ends.
So if I love to try and distill and like decode things in my head just to get something. So in terms of how people can deal with this, there's already a body language expert in those little pieces of the brain, the names which I've forgotten, but there's the expert there, but it's learning to listen to it. And so one of the biggest exercises people can do is learning to give themselves permission to pay attention to their own feelings and pay attention to their own instincts. And then that in and of itself, rather than taking a checklist of, oh, did he blink slower than such and such, is building that muscle memory so that then it comes naturally to actually have your own back. Is that
right?
On point.
Right. It's kind of odd at first, because the things that your brain is seeing is that person may be looking somewhere just briefly for a little bit too long. You may not realize that the guy most of the time won't realize that the person is looking at something too long. You know, when a natural thing would be quicker in whatever that situation is, they may look at a little too long and too much. For example, let's say you have somebody over. Let's say you two are married. And then you bring a guy home from when you were in college or something, you know, or in high school, and you haven't seen him for years, and he's your best friend growing up and all that. Let's say his name's Phil. And then you say, Lily, I'm bringing Phil home with me. He's from my guy. You've heard me talk about it. Oh yeah, Phil, bring him on in. We'll cook and we'll eat and we'll talk. Okay, great. And then as the night goes on, you know, Phil comes over and you all hang out and talk and eat. And Lily just acts like he's the greatest guy in the world. So nice to him. And you're like, oh man, it's so good seeing you. After all the talking and everything, the night comes to an end and he gets up and goes, hey bro, man, it's good seeing you again. You be careful out there too. And you all hug up real big. And then Lily's like, oh, you're so nice meeting you. Oh, Lily, you're so wonderful. And he hugs you and you say, okay, we'll see you later, wherever he goes. No sooner is that door shut than she turns to you and says, don't you ever bring that guy back in this house again. And you go, what? What's wrong with Phil? Phil? And she goes, yeah. And you say, what's wrong with Phil? And that's where she says, I don't know. Something's not right about that guy. That's because he's been maybe not looking at you from in places too long, but looking around the room, or when he's talking, he may start chopping his sentences up a little bit at the wrong place. Not like that bad, but your brain catches those things, and women's brain are going to see those things much faster than the men's brains. So especially when it comes to predatorial behavior, you know, predator behaviors, they're really good at that. So that's just an example, not just looking somewhere else, but they may have brought up odd subjects, or he may have, when you got up to go get something in the kitchen, and he may be sitting there with Lily, and he may lock into her just a little bit too tight as he's talking to her, and she'll get that too, you know. And when you're gone, he may start looking around a little bit, even though she's talking to him. Things like that, you know. He may not. The guy may be the greatest guy in the world. Yeah. But if he's not the greatest guy in the world, and those things start happening, that's what's letting her know something's up. So you can't be afraid to embrace that and go, I don't know. Because people take that as part of your personality after a while and go, well, she'll know, or he'll know. She didn't believe, you know. He's good at that, because you'll say, I don't know, I don't like that guy. Or you may not say that to him, but when you get in close quarters, you mean, I don't know, I just never liked him. And so they may be able to take you in confidence. What do you think about so-and-so? You know, I've been going out with him, or I'm going out with her. And you go, she seems okay, let's talk to her. And after a few minutes, you'll get a, you know, you'll be so in tune in that you'll be able to help with that, maybe.
Yeah, you know, Lily's instinct is incredible. I remember.
I'm sure it is.
I fell so foul of that. I won't go into the whole situation, but basically there was a situation where she did exactly that. She's like, there's something wrong here for da da da, and I was like, no, there's not. And I defended it. I was like, look, here are all the rational reasons why you're wrong and why everything's fine.
Yeah,
like an idiot. And do you know the sickening thing is, like, I won the debate. Like at the end of that, she's like, well, yeah, all of those points make sense. And then that situation turned into an absolute dumpster fire. And I was, at the end of it, I was like, no, you know, you're right. You're 100% right. And I logic's my way into making you wrong, but you were right.
I recorded all along. It as well. It's brilliant. It's my ringtone.
Wow. That's great. But see, girls pick up on that much quicker than guys do. Much quicker than guys do.
I think this is a thing. You know, this is one thing that I really, really loved around, like, learning around body language and profiling. Because we get taught to you know, question ourselves so much. It's like, oh, am I being mean? Or maybe they're just having a bad day, or, you know,
look for the best in people.
Yeah. I think people are so prepared to do that. But then suddenly when you go, oh, do you know what? No, I don't like the way they said that. Or did you see their body language? Or did you see that facial expression then? You know, when you actually are able to put the logic to it, it's like, it's like all of a sudden, yes, you can use your intuition, but guess what? You've got the logical side to back it up as well. So at least then.
I'm with you. With all seriousness. Yeah, I'm totally with you.
Yeah. I think that was a game changer for me when it came to even, just having, like, you know, connecting with people, having, you know, having conversations. I think, you know, growing up, I kind of had a little bit of social anxiety. And it was mainly because it's like, I can't, you know, I can feel these things. I've got this intuition going on. I've got this inner conflict of like, okay, how do I act in this situation when my body's going, oh, this is completely wrong, but you've got to act in a certain way. But being able to actually connect with people and see, okay, this is a right person to connect with. And this is not a right person to connect with.
Your gut will tell you. It may take a couple of dates. It may take hanging out with them some, but you'll figure it out.
Exactly. And then you've also got your new book as well that's come out. I've seen so many people with their pictures and everything, and it looks amazing. So you've actually got diagrams in there as well, haven't you?
Yes, I do.
There you go.
So it's understanding body language. So it's my first book. Everybody on the behavior panel has like these books that are, you know, the number of them. Jason's always one of his number one books. Greg's written like 11 books. No kidding. He's got like, and Mark's, all Mark's books are like, you know, are huge too. And Chase's are huge. I don't know. That's my first one. So I've been really lucky with it. It's like number two right now on Amazon.
That is amazing. Get it to number one now.
I'm trying. I want it to. You guys aren't anything. You know.
Well, we've got space on our bookshelves. So we'll get a couple.
Okay. Yeah. Because all these guys like have two or three or four of those. You know, it's like, and these people, Rockridge Press, I get this deal with Rockridge Press. They've been so good to me.
Really?
You know, I've never been familiar with publishing companies. I didn't know. Like, a lot of people do publish their own books. I thought, well, that's what I'll do. But no, they've been really, really cool, really good.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you're really lucky for that.
Yeah. What was the name? I'm actually publishing
Rockridge Press.
I'll check them out.
What kind of book is it?
Yeah, it's basically relationships and dating. So
going
through, if you're going to actually meet someone, it's kind of like the blueprint of how to meet the right person. I mean, Jonam's just like a case study at the moment. So, I mean, we're working.
There you go. There's a book that Greg Hartley did about dating too. See if you can find that one. And when it comes to narcissism, check out Joe Navarro. This guy, he wrote the book on the dangerous personality. He's got a book called Dangerous Personalities. Get that book.
It's really? Great. Okay.
Yeah.
I will do that. Thank you.
So, if you're in books, I get that. It's he's got some really good stuff when it comes to narcissism and the dangerous personalities. If that's what you're into, I always say he's the first three faces on the Mount Rushmore of body language. Do you guys know what Mount Rushmore is over there?
We've heard of it. It's the thing that's like made into fridge magnets and things, right?
That's the one. When you go where that is, you get a fridge magnet and take it home. Well, his head's and it's all presidents, but his is the first three heads on the four heads of my Mount Rushmore of body language anyway.
So who's the fourth?
Do what?
Who's the fourth head?
Probably Greg Hartley.
Yeah,
he's hardcore, man. It's pretty hard. He's you know, you got to get him on here. You know, I'll talk to him because I talk to him a couple times a day. So I'll talk to him today, and you got to get him on here. He's great, man. He really is.
That'd be amazing. Yeah, I know.
I like him.
Yeah, he seems absolutely brilliant. Like I said, his interview on Dr. Phil, the interrogation style.
Yeah, I know.
I felt like confessing, and I've never.
I think he comes on like a nice guy, but man, he can get up your hand if you don't watch it. Yeah, Dr. Phil loved that guy.
Absolutely amazing. Yeah.
Did you want to ask your special question?
What's my special question?
Shall I ask it?
Go on, you can ask my special question.
We're curious. Now the pressure's on me to remember it, right?
Oh.
So
that special question. No, I don't. We're recording. I'm joking.
I'm not going to say anything. Somebody I could just lob right in there. I'm not going to.
It's the thing I'm trying to find. No.
You're turning red.
No, we can edit that. Oh, God.
Isn't that called the psychopath thing?
No.
When it pops up there.
So.
It's not. Yeah.
There you go.
Okay. Brandon could edit that out, maybe.
That's it. Just a nice deep breath.
So with obviously living and breathing this stuff, human body language reading, how's that played into your life in terms of the like relationships and the biggest insights that's given you in just having a healthy relationship and being able to connect with someone in that way?
Well, let's talk about that. See, I got divorced in my first marriage because my wife was having an affair and I didn't know. Oh. And she thought I knew because of my skill set. And her hair, and she was acting weird and her hair was falling out. And I was like, well, I thought something was wrong. I thought she was sick or something until she told me. And so I totally missed it. Just went right by me. So when you get somebody really close to you, you don't see it. Sometimes or most of the time you won't see it because you know that person, you trust them, you love them. Same thing when you're talking about, oh, it's easy to spot a psychopath. I wonder how this happened to you. Well, that's how it happened. Mine wasn't a psychopath, don't get me wrong. But I mean, that's what happens to them. All of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, you're just in a situation you don't realize what's going on because you really haven't been paying attention. So even though that's what I do for a living and I've been doing this for a long time, I missed everything. I missed it all because I wasn't looking for that. I wasn't like looking at her trying to study and seeing what, and no bells and whistles went off that I was aware of, but I was seeing them everywhere. The way she was acting, her hair falling out, it was odd, but I thought maybe something was, she was sick or something, getting sick.
Yeah.
And so as it progressed from there, that's what I found out. So I thank God because then I got remarried. It's one of those things where you go, oh, this is the most horrible thing ever. Then you get remarried, you go, geez, this is the best thing that's ever happened. I'm so glad that happened. So it's the best thing that ever happened to me was being able to miss all that stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks that way so far.
Yeah.
But yeah, it helps because you can tell when everybody comes home every now and then has a bad day. But then when something starts bothering them, as you're talking about something, you'll see little things that tell you it's something specific. You try to turn that off at home. My wife's a private investigator. She's a PI. So she's well-versed in that's one of the reasons we get along so well. She's well-versed in human behavior.
Mm.
And you can really, sometimes when people get upset, they go, but sometimes those big deep breaths are a lot smaller. And she can get, and she'll say to me, so what's bugging you? What's going on? And then, or I'll see something in her. And I go, oh, so you're mad at so-and-so. And she won't go, how did you know? She'll go, yeah, I am. Here's what's going on. So I think it helps because you can, if you're with that person, they understand what you are good at. If you do that very well, then they understand you see those things and they don't have to question, how do you know that? Or what do you know? That doesn't come up. They just accept it and go on with it. So I think that helps a lot.
Mm.
Yeah, and other people's relationships, you can spot things whether you want to say things or not, depending on which one of them is your friend, that you're friends with. You could point out those types of things. But in personal relationships, it helps because you can see when something's wrong with them, you'll know how to start reacting to that person and talking to them to get them to tell you what's happening or to get them to relax and to feel better about things as you go along. Whether they want to tell you about what it is or not, you can tell they don't want to, so you don't go down that road, but you'll know something's bugging them or something specific is bothering them. The worst thing about being able to do this in social, in your family and close friends is when they try to have a surprise party for you. That's the worst. Never had one. I've had them, but there's never been surprised.
Story day, yeah.
And I'm going, I'm surprised. Is this a surprise? I'm surprised. That's the horrible part about it. You never get a surprise party. You get them, but you don't get surprised.
I love that. Yeah, but yeah, but I think it's like, it's that important element of being able to understand each other. It's like all of a sudden, and you can understand people through behavior, it's like, oh, they've had a bad day. You kind of know not to go in there and, be overt, or you can kind of communicate with people on their level, which is, which is so, so key. But yeah, I love the fact that your wife's a private investigator as well. So it's like having that common interest in play, and that already that foundation of that common understanding.
Yeah, yeah. She's awesome. It doesn't, guns don't bother her. Nothing bothers those types of things. She's, you know, so I lucked out as far as that goes, you know. So it's hard to find somebody that's into shooting as much as you are if that's your hobby. And then and the other things as well, and understands when you say, when the news comes on or when the story comes on, somebody's missing on the news, and you look at them and they go, well, you go, oh man, this isn't good, you know, I think that guy did whatever it was. And then 3 months later, 6 months later, you find out you're right. We based the whole course on that, from those conversations. On our, you know, we have body language tactics. We have this thing called the True Crime Workshop. Greg and I put together specifically because our wives love those true crime shows. And we, from sitting there having to watch them with them, we know the path, the structure of those, of what those true crime shows are. So we just set up some things to let you see, to look at the way we look at it. From the 911 call to, you know, first interaction when the cops first show up, and then when the detectives show up, or they first deal with the detectives, for all the way to the, every step of it, all the way to the interrogation and the confession. So that's one good thing that's come from it. And I know from Greg as well, because we were just talking and we were like, we should do a course on this, you know, because they're always saying, what about this? Look at this. I know this. A lot of times I'll have it figured out, but this is sort of helps you get through understanding what's happening and be able to say, oh, I see where we are now in the process, because there's a structure to that. Once there's a crime committed and you go through, then you got to deal, is this person a psychopath? What are we dealing with here? Could this person have done this? Whatever it is. Why would they have done it? But could they have done it? You know?
Oh, anyway. Great fun though. Yeah. take that and have a bit of fun with it and making a course from it. That's brilliant.
That's best in the Great British Bake Off and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing. I can't do that.
we thought it would be okay, and just like some women who were really into true crime would get, but it's been mobbed. I mean, it's doing really well. I mean, this thing does really well, but this thing just blew up on us. We weren't ready for that. You know, we figured, let's have something there. So if you want to do something else after you finish this one, you know, so
relatability, isn't it? You know, being able.
Yeah. And I was surprised. I was shocked at how many people would take this course, the body language tactics. Not that they would, but the people that did, there's musicians in there and actors and actresses. It's all kinds of people in there. You know, we wouldn't know it unless they wrote and said, hey, you know, but yeah, there's a bunch of them in there. So it's one of those, it really was a eye opener, I guess. I didn't realize this many people are into learning about body language and psychopathy and all those types of things, really, until we put that out. You know, I thought I knew, but I didn't know that many people are into it or that into it, you know?
Yeah. It's like the behavior panel as well. Like as soon as you did that first episode on the Tiger King.
Yeah. And that happened because we were getting on there, you know, Greg and I were on Zoom all the time. And then and Mark was like, so Mark and I would Zoom, then Mark and Chase would Zoom. We'd all be Zooming each other. And then Greg was like, and Greg and I were talking. We're like, well, let's get everybody together and we'll let's do one of these shows. So that first one is the very first time we did it. We didn't even know we were going to do more than that, except at the end you'll hear us talking about, we should do this again. So we did one more, then one more. And that thing blew up. So
it's incredible. Well, I mean, we've watched a few, haven't we? Like the Madeleine McCann, the one where that person got abducted by aliens.
Pistorius, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's like,
Man, we get the weirdest mail. We've been called we're hard left, and then we're hard right, and then we're devil worshipers, and then we're being hired by the McCanns, and then we don't like we don't believe that there's a possibility of anything living off the planet. And then we believe in lizard people. We get all these kinds of emails telling us what we think. It's like, I don't think that, politically, I don't care. I'm right down the middle. I couldn't tell you what's going on now. I don't know if that's a problem with Washington or somebody broke in over there. That's how into it I'm not. But yeah, that the UFO lady was weird. She said she had UFO kids or whatever.
Oh gosh, yeah.
So the I got a request from my mother. She messaged me yesterday, and she said, you got to speak to these guys, like message them or something, and get them to find out if to watch the interviews after Elvis died or you know, supposed to have died, and see like check out all of those things, the interviews with his father and his brother and these guys, and see what the behavior panel says. Did Elvis die when they said he did, or is it?
What's your mother's name?
Mandy.
Mandy.
She will love
I said,
that.
she messaged me. I said, tell you what, provide some YouTube links that you think would be good, and I'll send them across. So then she did. She sent this huge wall of like 5 or 6 different recommendations and the whole backstory. I thought, this is great.
So did you send them to us?
Sorry?
Have you sent them to us at the behavior panel?
No, yeah, that was literally this morning.
Oh, okay, yeah, because if you want to write us, you can get a hold of us at thebehaviorpanel@gmail.com. You know, we spell it differently than you guys do. We don't have a U in there. A lot of people say it's the behavioral or a behavior with a B-E-H-V-I-O-U-R, but that was our .com was taken, so we went with the O-R. And we found that was in America they say behavior, where in everywhere else apparently they say behavior with a U in it.
I know we had to have a look at our copywriting. It's like, okay, do we go American or do we go English?
Yeah. So it's, yeah, but somebody else had the behavior panel with a behavior with a U. So we
British person.
Probably.
Guessing.
Probably. Yeah. It probably like 4 guys that are talking like you guys talk. Like Mark talks. Probably 4 women that talk like Mark. Well, listen, thanks so much. If you need anything else, let me know.
Awesome. Great. Cool.
Thank
you so much.
Thank you.
Soon.
All right. See you guys in a bit.
Cheers.
Thank you for joining us on the Love with Intelligence radio show. I'm so grateful that you joined us today, and I'm also so grateful that you are dedicating your time to improve your love life. So, as you are already on this journey, would it be crazy for you to jump over to our website, lovewithintelligence.com, and check out our many resources that's going to support you to enjoy your dream love life now? So that's lovewithintelligence.com, and I shall see you next time. Bye for now.